On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
So you get excited because they're excited, gets me excited, gets all of our fans excited, and our sponsors. So it's going to work out.
Bless you, boys! Unbelievable! I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
Step into the well-informed, ill-advised, and oddly entertaining world of Tall Can Sports.
Here we go!
Light the candle!
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to an all-new Tall Can Sports. Joined as is becoming more and more often here, Matty Lang down in the six. What's up, Matt? Can I get? How'd I do? Do I sound cool enough?
Spot on, man.
All right. I'm Matt Robinson, sitting here in the 613. I don't know why we don't get the cool nickname, but that's we'll keep it for Toronto. We don't have a Drake, I guess, is the problem. We have an Alanis Morissette, and she never coined anything cool for Ottawa.
Come on,
here,
you guys had Tom Green.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, he made, I don't know if you've ever tried it, he made a great beer with Bose Brewing Company, which is a company just outside of town here. I can't even remember everything that was in it now. It's been several years since I tried, but they had like a Tom Green dark something that he made with them. It was pretty tasty anyway.
I don't think I ever tried it. I do have a vague recollection of his face on a can,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
I think that was at a time that it was a little harder to get Bose still in Toronto.
Sure, yeah, no, and they've expanded in a big way. I got exciting news before I ask you what you're drinking tonight, because I was doing a little bit of a look around in the beer store here today and found something that I have never seen in Ottawa before. It's not particularly well known, but it's from the Black Oak Brewing Company. It is their Nut Brown Ale, not overly particularly creatively named, but... it was something I found at a place. I always used to go to this, a bunch of times I went to this barbecue place with my cousin Brandon down in Oshawa where we grew up. And it was called Buster Rhinos, and it was a place that just did like pulled pork and shit like that. And they always had a bunch of craft beer. And I went in there and I found this Nut Brown Ale from the Black Oak Brewing Company and fell in love with it, but couldn't find it almost anywhere. Every now and then you'd find it at the LCBO in Oshawa. I know they're out of Toronto, so I'm sure it's much easier to find there. But when I moved up to Ottawa, there was never any sign of it. And it just jumped out at me tonight, man, as I was walking around the beer store and had to grab up a bit of it. So they only had bottles, no cans. So we're into the pop top tonight. But that's what we're going on here, man. And it's I'm pretty excited about it.
That's old school with the pop tops today.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
What do you got going on?
So tonight I decided to pick up a couple Flying Monkeys at the old beer store today.
Yeah.
So some stuff from up in Barrie. And today I opened up the 12 Minutes to Destiny.
Ooh.
And I don't know if it's your cup of tea. no pun intended, because it's a raspberry hibiscus lager with a little bit of tea in the background.
Okay.
It's very refreshing. Definitely, I mean, it's only 6 degrees in Toronto today, but definitely a spring summer beer.
Yeah,
a little bit of raspberry and hibiscus and tea-like flavor to it. Really nice, easy drinking beer. So I was pretty happy to pick this one up. I hadn't seen it in the beer store for a little while, so
that sounds
pretty
like
happy on this end of the city.
Yeah, that sounds like something I'd try, man. Like you say, maybe more in the summer, but I don't mind a little fruit. I'm not much into Radlers and stuff, right? But I don't mind a beer with a little fruit infused into it. Like, that's kind of nice sometimes. And as you said, maybe more in the summer than here in a 2 degrees as we head into May. Man, they're calling for 2 to 5 centimeters of snow on May 1st here in Ottawa. Like, I don't know what the fuck's happening.
This has got to be one of the worst springs we've had, at least in the Ontario in years, because you just keep expecting it to get warm, and I'm still wearing a winter jacket today. Yeah. So starting to lose my patience a little bit. That might be an understatement right now, because we're not getting snow, so you've got it way worse than we do, but still not pleasant on this this side of the province.
Yeah, I don't know how many people have been following on the news, but like, there's all kinds of problems on both sides of the Ottawa River here, as it's cresting really high. It's well above record highs, which they also shattered in 2017. And so a bunch of parts of both the Ottawa and Gatineau side of the river are flooded out, homes and all kinds of sad stuff like that going on. And at first they were calling for 20 to 40 more millimeters of rain on Wednesday, and then more rain through Thursday and Friday, which would have been just a disaster. And then they changed it to snow, which still isn't great. But you're like, all right, well, that's probably better than getting that much more rain dumped. I mean, it's still precipitation, but, you know, maybe we'll dodge a bit of a bullet here. I don't know, but it's a bad scene right now, and I don't think snow or rain is going to help. But
no, and I mean, from, you know, the news reports we're getting in the side of the province, it, you know, definitely doesn't look good, and you know, hoping that everybody's getting through it okay. And
yeah, it's rough.
Prime Minister Trudeau's packing enough sandbags there to help everybody out.
Well, and they showed, like, the Ottawa 67s, who I want to talk about just for a second here in a minute. They were down there. They had their whole team. There was a couple of high schools down there doing nothing but loading sandbags here all day on Tuesday. Like, so the community's come out in a big way. You're seeing people ripping around just on four-wheelers and stuff, handing out bottles of water and lunches that they've made and stuff like that. Just, you know, the community coming together in a big way. But, man, it's way over some of the records that and anything that anyone predicted. So, you know, at this point, it's just do what you can. But I think a lot of stuff's going to be lost here. So that's kind of sad. I don't want to dwell on it too much. I mentioned the Ottawa 67s. They advanced to the OHL final. And I only bring it up because they will be facing, from the Western Conference, the Guelph Storm, which is the favorite team of our pal Steve McLean from the OHL Fanboys. And he's going to be in town on Saturday to watch Game 2 of the Guelph Storm Ottawa 67s final. And he will be swinging by the TCA studios for his first visit after that game.
Nice.
Yeah, so it'll be kind of cool to have him in studio. People have heard him before. He's done some of predictions for us. He's been on the show once before. Certainly those of you who listen to his OHL podcast know that he does a great job on that. But this will be the first time he's actually in our studios. He's also spending the night in town. He doesn't have to drive all the way back, so we will be able to you know, have a beverage or two while he's here. So that'll be kind of fun. But really looking forward to having Steve in the Talk and Audio Studios for the first time. So you can look for that. Probably look for that most likely on Sunday. We'll drop that. I think it's going to be Saturday night that he's here, so we'll see how things go. But it'll be Sunday or Monday for those who want to check that one out. That'll be Steve McLean later on this week. Maddie, before we touch on the Toronto Raptors, I want to touch on the Toronto Blue Jays for just a second.
Let's do it.
As they call up, finally, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. On last Friday. He makes his debut. Had a fine weekend for a rookie. I think maybe those of us who really were having huge expectations based on everything that came up, maybe were a little unfair to him. But his first at bat, I think it was his first at bat, yeah, where he grounds out to Kendrys Morales, of all people. But the ball comes off his bat at 106 miles an hour. He hammers another one out to left field that gets caught at the last minute. Another one out to right center that gets caught at the last minute. So he's making all kinds of hard contact, just not getting a ton of hits. He does get a double in the bottom of the ninth that allows the Blue Jays to come back and tie and eventually win that game. But he goes 3-for-12 in his first weekend in the majors. So 250 as they head out west. Nothing wrong with that for a rookie just getting his feet wet. It felt like there was a little bit of a buzz in the building on Friday night when he debuted, and then maybe it died off again Saturday, Sunday. But I was intrigued, and I was watching for the first time in weeks, to be honest with you. I wanted to check it out. I was back in watching a little Blue Jays action.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I happened to stick around downtown in the core at work, because unlike most Blue Jay fans, I was actually going to Avengers Endgame on Friday night,
right,
which still superseded Vladdy showing up to the ballpark.
For sure. Would you like to spoil it for some people? That's been a hot topic online, is Game of Thrones and Endgame Twitter spoilers.
Listen, I figure I've got to give everybody 1 week, and then I can talk about it openly.
Fair enough, man.
Right? Everybody's got a full week to go check out the movie, then it's your own fault at that point.
Totally.
And it's killing me because nobody I know has seen the movie except the two friends I went to see it with. So okay. I'm sure they're tired of listening to me talk about it, but I haven't stopped for five days.
So, like, texts in the middle of the night, like, can you fucking believe?
Like, oh, yeah. I'm sending them all these links to websites about, like, fan theories, like just full 100% nerd right now about this. Yeah. Like, unapologetically, quite frankly.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And for those of you who've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. And for the rest of you, get the fuck off the couch and go watch it. It's so good. It was worth the 11 years or 10 years of waiting for this final chapter, at least of this part of the Marvel Universe. It was fantastic.
See, I'm not into this sort of thing at all. I don't know the story. I don't know the movies. I didn't know it had been quite that long of a wait for this final, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this was the end of Phase 3, which kind of is its own phase.
Sure.
And it started back with Iron Man, right? With that first movie, and that's when they were kind of rolling the movies out slowly at the beginning. I mean, now it seems like overkill. We seem to get 3 or 4 Marvel movies a year, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Which I can understand some people going, how many of these movies can they actually make? But
many
if it,
people
if,
keep paying for.
That's it. And it smashed just about every record, I think, in history as far as movies are concerned this weekend. So for a movie that cost $400 million to make, they've already made their money back after like 3 days. So they're doing okay. And they're going to keep throwing us these movies as long as the rest of us keep showing up and watching them.
No doubt, man.
To get it back to sports, I guess. Because I was hanging around downtown, I left the office around 6 o'clock. So prime time for Jays fans showing up.
Yeah.
I heard on the radio on Monday, the expected number of fans on Thursday was 14,000 fans.
Oof.
14,000 showed up to the ticket office on Friday before the game.
Got the walk up.
So they doubled it just based on the news of Vladdy coming into town.
I can't believe seeing the Oakland Athletics wasn't enough to bring people out there. After seeing that's it. We've seen them twice. That's it for the year, and we're done now. It's twice in 1 week. That's enough
that's
for Oakland.
It's too bad because we kind of own them too.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. If we could keep playing those guys, that'd be great. But you're right.
Less
that is
Yankees,
wild.
More athletics.
To double the attendance in 1 day is wild, and there's no question whatsoever as to why that was.
So if you're looking for a reason to why maybe it looked a little crazier on Friday, I think that's why.
Yeah,
I think that's
sure.
why the crowd was definitely there to see him and see him specifically.
Well, so you were in the movie during the game.
I was in the movie. I saw the before and after of the Jays game.
Yeah. The crowd was going crazy for him during batting practice. They opened up the gates early and let people in for batting practice. Crowd was going crazy just as he walked to the plate, and they had the Vladdy chants, they had "Let's go Vladdy," they had a bunch of them during this, and it sounded during just those at bats, it sounded every bit like 2015, 2016 Toronto Blue Jays, and that's with only just shy of 30,000 in the building.
That's amazing.
But people were losing their minds, and like I said, he grounds out to first. And people are cheering. He fouls one off hard, and people are cheering, right? Like, just getting a look at this guy. People badly wanted to explode, and as the game was going on, and it was looking more and more like he wouldn't get a hit, and the Blue Jays are leading, and he's scheduled to bat in the bottom of the ninth, so he might not come back up, and then they blow the lead, so now he does get to bat. And the place came unglued when he hit the double down the right field line, takes one the other way, you know, and you can see as you look at him, even at this young age, even in, you know, just his first weekend, you can see what people are talking about. His swing is vicious, right? Like the power
that's
that he comes through with is hard, and he's, for a rookie, he's laying off tough pitches, and you can see why in the minors he's walking more than he strikes out, which is unheard of for a kid that age. But you can see the little things that everyone was talking about, right? And it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, and that's, you know, for those of us old enough to remember his father playing for the Expos and for the Angels, he was always just an amazing contact hitter who just had an unbelievable ability and strength in his body to put the ball out of the park.
Right.
And his son, Vladdy Jr., just is that much stronger, that much earlier in his career. So like you're saying, you know, the speed the ball's coming off is bad. It's going to happen.
106 mile an hour ground ball.
Yeah. All this guy's got to do is keep putting the bat on the ball, and it's going to find its way into the gaps. Yeah. It's going to find its way into the or over the alley. This kid's going to be fine. I mean, going 3-for-12 in your first series, yeah, maybe it's nothing to call Cooperstown about just yet, but there was also two of those games were very important late inning hits that helped win the game. So
absolutely.
I think that's just as important as how many hits you're getting is when you're getting those hits, right?
You have to be the moment.
Got to be a clutch hitter. Hallmark of those, the 2015, 16 Jays, right? Of being clutch hitters, right?
Yeah.
And not the team doesn't need to have 12 hits a game, but in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning, or when there's guys on base, you gotta put the bat on the ball. And I think I did catch one of the games. I think it was early part of the game. I think it was on Sunday. And, you know, he had had so many at-bats up to that point, and nobody had been on base for any of those at-bats.
That's right. And in the first game, he kept coming up as the leadoff guy. Like he was the first batter of the inning, so there was nothing going on. You were the first one out there. Yeah, he had never had anybody out in front of him. He should probably get used to that.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, on this Jays team, not much help he's going to get quite now. And, you know, that's tough because, the pitchers can pitch differently when there's nobody on base.
That's right.
Right? You're going to get a lot better pitches to hit when you've got somebody on second.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can find somebody to get on the fucking bag in front of them, and maybe he can get some RBIs this year. But
Well, and it's a little rough because now they're out. As we sit here, they're just getting ready to throw the first pitch in Anaheim as they're out west for the week. So a bit of a drag for the masses, as most people are not able to stay up for those late games to see if he starts to get it on track a little bit. But nothing.
You know, interesting, though, eh, that he's, you know, the second series is going to be in Anaheim. I wonder if he does get a little bit of a cheer from the hometown crowd, even.
Could be.
You know, his dad having
played so long there.
Played there, won an MVP there, done a lot of damage there.
Well,
so,
it'll be hard for the media types, too, to not start drawing comparisons, even no matter how premature it is, to Mike Trout, who I think, you know, most people will accept is at worst a top three player in the game. I don't think anyone's expecting Vladdy to defend like Mike Trout, and obviously Mike Trout playing the outfield like he does. You know, I don't know that we can expect Vladdy to ever be that good defensively, but he was a young phenom coming in like that, right? And so it'll be interesting to hear, the media to start to draw those lines a little bit and those comparisons. That's the other thing we didn't mention. For all the talk as to whether or not he's going to be able to play third, made a couple of tough plays. One in his first game where there was a hard chopping ball that he had to charge and did pretty well with that. One that he had to back off and move to his right, and he gunned it across. Everybody said he's got a plus arm, and he showed that a little bit as well. So, you know, he hasn't made any kind of, you know, Troy Gloss or Josh Donaldson diving into the stands kind of plays yet or whatever. But in terms of can he be a serviceable third baseman, you know, so far looks fine. And I understand we're talking about an extremely small sample size, but this is what we have to work with right now. I've been happy with what I've seen.
Yeah, no, he looks good.
Yeah.
He looks good. We've talked about the fact that I think you and I would love to see him play first base.
Eventually, yeah.
Anything else just to prolong his career here. I think he looked fine, man.
Yeah.
And you got to take it with – I think we all have to take it with a grain of salt. This isn't – you know, he's coming from playing on a real baseball field, and now he has to play on Sky Dome's field. So
true.
Is there going to be mistakes? Yes, for sure. The ball's always going to come off the turf differently here. So he looked good. I thought he looked really good. What I thought was interesting, and I don't know if you saw the rumor report coming out today. I just caught it as I got off of work today. There's a rumor that the Jays are actively looking to trade Sanchez, Stroman, and Smoke.
I saw that.
And
it's Ken Rosenthal, too, pretty well connected. Yeah.
I just rolled my eyes, right? I thought, we finally put 30,000 people in the seats.
Yeah.
And then next day you say, you let the rumor come out that you want to trade your three most well-known guys not named Vladdy.
Yeah, yeah. No, and they're 14-14, right? Back at .500. Stroman has looked unbelievable. Look, I don't think this team is going to contend, but this is a weird thing, right? Where in theory you go, this is exactly what you wanted Stroman to do, so that his value would be so high when you go to trade him. But at the same time, you're like, maybe we should be, you know, holding on to that. Who's going to pitch, right? We have a lot of really good.
Somebody to pitch.
Yeah, we have a lot of really good young prospects, but very, very few on the pitching side. Really, in terms of striking distance, it's only Pearson down at AAA that might be close. And beyond that, it's pretty thin, and anybody else who's got the high upside is still maybe down at single A. So
It's a risky proposition. I can understand them saying, okay, if we trade these three guys, maybe we get a bunch of pitching prospects and three of them turn out, or two of them turn out, or one of them turns out.
Yeah.
But we've seen this happen before. How many stud players get traded and you get nothing for them? Right? You think you got these blue chip prospects, but the prospects still have to become MLB players.
Remember Drayback? The key you got back for Roy Halladay, and it was never anything. Anthony Ghost, I think, was part of that deal.
We got nothing back from Halladay.
Yeah.
We got zero back for Halladay.
Yeah, Doug Drayback's kid. I can't remember his first name all of a sudden, but Drayback.
Kyle
Drayback, that's right, yeah. And Anthony Ghost, and none of them turned out to be shit, so...
I mean, you just never know with these guys, and the last thing you want is in 3 years from now, we've got Jansen and Bichette and Vladdy and whoever else we have up here.
Biggio,
And Biggio, and you've got, you know,
maybe
a couple
Alfred's
decent
doing,
starters, and you go, God, I really wish I had an ace.
Yeah, if you just had one more, right? And he's been so jacked up, right? He and Vladdy were over at the Raptors game. I'm talking about Stroh again, right? And he was engaged with the Leafs during their little, you know, he clearly wants to be here. He likes being part of the thing. And I know he rubs some people the wrong way. And I know in a rebuild, you have to make some tough calls. And so I'm not saying for sure I wouldn't trade him, but it's risky, man, especially if, I don't know.
It's riskier when you have a team that's not drawing fans.
Yep.
And a fickle fan base right now because you've lost a lot of their fan
favorites. Yeah, but
favorites.
Half that fan base doesn't like him. Like, he's a very divisive guy, right? You and I are both pro-Sanchez.
I'd be surprised if you want to say 50%.
All right.
I'd be surprised. Okay. I'd be surprised. I mean, obviously, there's going to be some people who don't love him for a lot of reasons.
The same people
I think
who
he's
don't
got
like
a
Willie.
Exactly. Exactly. You know what? I'd want to see the Venn diagram of the people who don't like Stroh and those who don't like Willie.
It's a perfect
circle.
And who
are the ones who hate both of them.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A perfect circle.
It is a perfect
circle. At least the ones on Twitter.
Yeah, for sure. So they're 14-14. You know, we'll see. But that's after a 4-10 start. So they've gone 10-4 since then to get back into it, and only 2.5 out of a wild card as we sit here on May 1st or whatever it is.
If this team finished anywhere near 500, I would consider this a huge win for this season.
I would too, man. I would too.
Because I expected them to be a bottom three team.
All right. I didn't think they'd be quite as bad as you did, but I didn't think they would contend, obviously. And I still don't think they will, but I'm encouraged. And, you know, it's been fun to watch, especially after that first week or so where it just seemed like they were they got no hit into the seventh inning like 6 times in their first 10 games or something ridiculous. Like, this is fucking brutal. But Brandon Drury is suddenly on fire, right? He had a hell of a weekend.
Wow, what a crazy weekend he had.
Eric Sogard, right, he's all of a sudden got like a 10-game hit streak going. He was not supposed to be anything, and he's just killing it in the leadoff spot. Hard to expect a lot of this stuff to continue, but, you know, it's fun right now.
It's fun while it's happening, that's for sure. And, you know, as we get into if we ever get into the heat here in Toronto, you know, the ball's going to start flying out of that dome like it always does, right?
Yep.
And that's where you're going to want Vladdy coming up in the middle of August.
For sure, man. Why don't we move over to the NBA? The Raptors, I thought game one was fascinating, only in the sense that, you know, I guess maybe a little bit in the first half, but through most of the game, they looked to be doing everything pretty much in stride. And never looked like they were in a ton of trouble. And then it was almost the polar opposite in the second half. It looked like Philly made some adjustments in terms of who was going to guard who and in terms of their rotations. Toronto's bench got absolutely shelled, and they find themselves going back to Philly, tied at one. What did you think of it? I got to imagine 76er fans are happy to be coming home with the split. Where do you think this series is at right now heading into game three on Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, nothing's changed in my perspective of how I thought the series was going to go. I was hoping for a 5-game series for the Raptors, but always assuming it was probably going to go 6. Philly's just got so much talent. I figured they were going to take – they were definitely going to take one game, probably two, and the Raptors are just a better all-around team. And I think over a seven-game series, you're going to see that better team win most of the time. I was at game one, as you know, because I was texting you for part of the game and trying to post a little bit on the Instagram account.
Yeah, at Tall Can well. Audio.
At Tall Can Audio. Yeah. And it was – I'll tell you the story leading up to the game. So, yeah. I was lucky enough to be invited to a box with a friend's his parents had a box for the night.
Look at this, so I got high to go up rolling motherfucker. To,
yeah, it's the fake high rolling motherfucker over here. Let me tell you. So we roll into the box, and they wanted us there early. So we were pretty early. We got to the game at 6:30 for a 7:30 tip off, which is fine because you get to get settled in. It's not too hectic yet.
Some drinks and some
get a little bit of food in that. Get a little food, get a couple drinks in you. Yeah. So I actually grabbed a sparkling water to start my day off because I was, and the reason is I was just nervous.
Yeah.
You know, Raptors game ones. Home.
Yeah.
You know, never feel good about it. And I hadn't been to a playoff home game yet this year, so it's been a while. And I'm there, and I'm just kind of, you know, perched up over the glass, and this older lady comes up to me. I didn't even realize she was the server at the time.
Oh.
Because I didn't really know many people in the box. I knew two people in the box. So this older lady comes up to me and starts talking to me, and she's like, "You nervous?" I said, "Yeah, I mean, game ones." And she goes, "No, we got this." I'm like, "Are you sure?" I'm like, "I've been to so many game ones we've lost." She goes, no, trust me. This year we've got these guys.
Nice.
And I'm like, "Okay." And then I turn around and she goes, "Can I get you a beer?"
Yeah, you'd better.
And I was like, oh, you work here. Okay, yeah. I'll definitely take a beer while you're at it. Listen, everything that could have gone right for the Raptors in game one went right for the Raptors in game one.
Yeah.
Going into this playoffs, not only this series, Joel Embiid, the best player on the other team, his knees are bad. He's been fighting a flu or a cold. They've really been struggling trying to integrate their four or five starters in together as they picked up.
Yeah, they turned over a bunch of their roster.
Yeah, they picked up Butler within, you know, the first quarter of the year. But that still means you didn't have them all through training camp. Then they picked up Tobias Harris from the Clippers, who's a great scorer, but a guy who needs the ball quite a bit. And they picked up a bunch of other guys throughout the in that end of that trade deadline there, including Greg Monroe after we let him go, after we improved the team. He was a buyout candidate, so he ended up going to their team.
Right.
They don't move well as a team. They've got great individual skill. That's what it looked like during game one. It looked like a couple individuals playing a team that's always played together.
Right.
And then you add to the fact that Kawhi is on playoff Kawhi right now, which is a
so
total
funny
different
too,
layer.
Eh? Just to go back to your old point, because it's not like the Raps had a ton of time with their whole lineup playing together either. But you're right. That's exactly what it looked like, a unit versus a bunch of individuals.
It did. And I mean, Kawhi was Kawhi in game two as well, even though he had a little bit of a tougher time.
Yeah.
They defended him a lot better, but he still put up his points. He still got his space.
Yeah.
He still defended really well. The two big differences, well, let's say three big differences. Game one, Siakam could not miss.
Right.
And it took Siakam till the fourth quarter yesterday night to really start hitting some shots.
Mm-hmm.
The entire bench, what did we finish with? 4 or 5 points? I think it was 5 points, the entire bench.
Yeah, it was. At one point when I looked, it was like 26-5 bench versus bench, right? You can't win that fucking way.
They could not hit a shot. Even the starting lineup, right? Marc Gasol went 1 of 7. Danny Green went 1 of 6.
Oh, Danny Green in that last minute was killing me, right?
That's it. And he's getting these wide open shots. And, you know, it was the first half when they were down by, you know, they went into the half down by 13. I think at one point it was worse than that. It was like 15 or 16 points.
Yeah.
And we were 1 of 10 from three. And you're like, it's just one of those nights for the Raptors, right? It's just, it's not going to happen, but we just kind of kept it close, and had that chance to tie it at the end and maybe even win it. It just didn't happen.
Well, they went into the fourth quarter. I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off.
No, please.
In the basketball part of the fucking show, especially. But when they went into the fourth quarter, I think they had gotten it back to being within three, and you came out with the bench again and turned it into somehow being down 9. Like, at some point, you got to go back to your guys. I know you love to shit on Dwayne Casey. I was seeing a little bit, man, just a little bit of that, you know, don't be so stodgy here, right? Get to it. Get back to your guys.
Yeah. I thought they left Kawhi on the bench too long. It took until about 9 minutes left, so about 3 minutes into the quarter till they put Kawhi out. I'm like, can we make a lineup change here? Like, there was one point in that fourth quarter where you're right. It was like the Raptors didn't hit a shot for the first couple minutes.
Yeah. You had worked so hard to get it back to that close and then just pissed it all away.
That's it. And you're 100% right on that. And again, it was just one of those days where the shots weren't falling and maybe everything was just going too well in game one.
Sure.
Regression to the norm. And this was like that third and fourth quarter against the Orlando Magic there.
Yeah.
In game one of the last series where they just couldn't buy a bucket no matter what they tried. Two-pointers, three-pointers. They were getting open looks, good looks.
Right.
At the end of the day, you just got to put the ball in the fucking basket, right? what I left with that game was this is a more winnable series than I thought it was going to be.
Really?
Because the Raptors shot 36%. If you take Kawhi out of it, they shot 30%.
Yeah.
And we were still one shot away from tying the game in the fourth quarter. If the Raptors can play that poorly offensively and still have Philly on the ropes,
yeah.
I'm sorry, Philly. And I tried to listen to a bunch of US podcasts today and they were going on about how great Philly was. And at the end, even all the American sportscasters are like, but the Raptors still had them.
Yeah.
Raptors' defense has been so dominant this entire postseason, and it's one thing to be dominant against Orlando.
Right.
But they've just continued this again against the Philadelphia 76ers. And unless Embiid can find another level, and full marks to Embiid, he was sick. Definitely last game there was some questions whether he was going to play or how much he was going to play.
Yeah.
And he made two great plays yesterday in the fourth quarter, one to find an open Jimmy Butler for a three ball and one to get that last 2 points there in the last possession for them. Big plays in a big moment.
Yeah.
But unless he finds another level, I can't see them giving the Raptors much trouble or pushing this to seven.
You know what I thought, man? It was a great point. I'm not sure if you had a chance to see it, and we'll share it at facebook.com/TallCanAudio, at TallCanAudio on Twitter. There was a great article, I thought, by Bruce Arthur today in The Star, and he talked about one of the things that they did to Kawhi in terms of finding a weakness in Kawhi or something that Kawhi was going to struggle with is forcing Kawhi to go to his teammates. And if they're going to push on him that high, he's okay, but he's not a great passer. And they're going to force him to pass a lot, and they're going to force the other guys to try and beat them with the way that they took on Kawhi. And now, don't get me wrong, Leonard was still unbelievable, right? And he still played a great game. But if they're going to force him to do that, if they're going to force him to dish more, if they're going to force him to put it out to other guys and take their chances there, then it becomes, I'm not saying 50-50, but they give themselves a better chance, and I thought that was an interesting adjustment just with how hard they went at him and forced him to push it off to somebody else, and I kind of like that. Force your lesser guys to beat you, right? Like,
yeah, and I thought that was – I think everybody who watched the game could see how much more trouble he had finding open space.
Yeah.
I think moving Ben Simmons, who's a long defender on him, was a good move on their part. I don't think it shuts Kawhi down.
Right.
But it doesn't make it more challenging.
Sure.
Sure. I thought they made, they put Embiid on Siakam, which I thought was a good idea too, because Embiid just can overpower him a little bit, even though Siakam's a little bit quicker.
Right.
We're going to see, the Raptors are going to force him to play Embiid as much as he possibly can. And I don't know if he's physically capable of playing too much right now.
Right.
Every time they put Boban out there, the guy who looks like a bad guy, when from Die Hard,
yeah.
and he moves like one too.
Yeah.
He's just getting absolutely dominated. Greg Monroe played pretty well yesterday, but he went out with an ankle sprain. Their only other option is Amir Johnson, who's not a true five either. He's really a four.
Yeah.
He was done when the Raptors gave up on him 4 years ago. I can't see, they just don't have the depth without their starters to really, like, they have to play their starters 40 minutes game plus.
For sure. And can you go deep in a series that way?
Yeah. And even with that, I still don't see them causing the Raptors enough trouble. They came out, they changed up their, you know, they moved their chess pieces around.
Yeah.
And that was great. Now we get the chance to see, I know, unfortunately, we got to wait till Thursday for game three in Philadelphia, but we're going to see what Nick Nurse answers back with and what schemes he's going to be able to come up with. Again, Danny Green isn't going to go 1 of 6 again. Marcus Ole's not going to go 1 of 7 again. Fred VanVleet's going to take more than 2 shots the next game.
Right.
You know, literally everything offensively that could have gone wrong went wrong.
Yeah.
We're not going to see this again. So for Philadelphia to win, they're going to have to – they're not going to be able to put up 90-some points. They're going to have to put up over 100 points a game. And against this Raptors defense, it's going to be very challenging for them. I still think they probably take one game, maybe game – whether it's game three or game four, who knows. But I just nothing's really changed in one game. And I think there's that always – excuse me. Always that overreaction in playoff games, right?
Oh, yeah.
As I'm watching the Boston-Milwaukee series here in game two, you know, Boston just had their way with Milwaukee in game one. And everybody online and everybody on the podcast were like, well, I guess we had it wrong. Boston, maybe Boston is the best team in the East.
Yeah, I saw that too, man.
At halftime, just before halftime, Boston had a 4 or 5 point lead. And since then, Milwaukee's out. I think Milwaukee's only given up about 40 points, and we're coming to the end of the game.
Wow.
But they've gone on to score 60-some points. So right now they're up by almost 30 points.
Well, you see it a lot, right, in all sports, right, that the emotions swing hard with every one win and loss, whether it's in the fan base or the media. Things change in a hurry, and you try not to overreact a little bit, but it's difficult.
And don't get me wrong, that's the beauty of playoffs, right?
Yeah.
That's the excitement of playoffs. This is why everybody loves playoffs. It's always a little amusing, you know. We play over 82 games in basketball and hockey, and you lose one game in the playoffs and everybody loses their goddamn mind, right? Overreactions, even within a game seven, right? The absolute overreactions and the narratives that come out of one game sometimes can be a little nauseating, unless it's something, you know, like not playing your best player Austin Matthews more in your third line center.
Been meaning to tell you, man, that and I wanted to tell our listeners that our post game seven show after the Leafs Bruins series that we swore we weren't going to do is now the second most listened to show of the year. So people were feeling it and enjoying our drunk suffering, I guess.
You got another of the same ones up there, or what?
Yeah, I'm going to do the same thing again. They're going down nice, and one of the, I guess, okay things about the bottle is it's a little less to it, so maybe I end up a little less tanked after a couple. On a Tuesday night, you know how it is, man. Got shit to do tomorrow. And
yeah, sometimes.
So as I crack into another one of these beautiful nut brown ale from Black Oak Brewing Company, if you're interested in following along, if you like the beer side of this stuff, both Maddie and I update the Tall Can Audio Instagram account with what we're drinking, just, you know, in case you forget as you go or whatever, or you want to follow the breweries. So give us a follow at Tall Can Audio on Instagram. All the beers end up there one way or another. Maddie,
no, actually, on to that, Matt. Just because while we were off air there for a quick second, you mentioned, you know, the beauty of the bottle is that, you know, it's just a tiny bit less alcohol than a tall boy, right?
Yeah.
So for my second beer, I was actually, you know, done this show enough. I'm starting to pre-plan this.
Obviously, yeah.
So I picked up another Flying Monkey, but my second beer tonight is the Anti-Gravity Lager, which is their light lager.
Okay.
So it comes in at a nice 4%, which is really nice. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there who don't want a light beer unless it's a, you know, cottage day.
Sure.
This is a fantastic light beer.
Really? All right.
You want a beer? It still tastes like beer, but not like a Coors Light.
Okay.
There's actually some flavor to it.
Yeah.
It's won a bunch of awards over the last 10 years. Great little beer to pick up if you're – I mean, now it's all over the LCBO, but definitely if you're going to the cottage and you're passing through Barrie, Flying Monkeys makes a fantastic light beer.
So we'll get Maddie to throw those up on the Instagram as well, at Tall Can Audio, so people can check back if you're interested in checking out Flying Monkeys Brewery, I guess, out of Barrie, Ontario. So you mentioned a minute ago two things that I'm going to ask you to circle back to a little bit. First of all, being that, you know, the next game being on Thursday, you know, it's a bit of a long break between, I know there's some travel in there. I wonder who the extra day is good for. The Raptors have been beat up a little, or they enjoy the load management with Kawhi. Does giving him the extra day off, you know, is that good for them? Or does it favor Philly in the fact that they have to run their starters so much that giving them the extra day is really far more important than it is to Toronto? And going along with that, you know, you've been pretty critical of Dwayne Casey over the years. It is time, after Philly made some interesting adjustments going into game two and Toronto never really reacted or got it figured out. You know, do you think he's got anything up his sleeve, or what would you like to see him doing going into that game three after the long break? You can take whichever one of those you want first, but
yeah, I think it favors each team differently. Toronto definitely has been they've been playing their starters, at least, you know, Kyle, Kawhi, and Siakam just as much as Philly's been playing their starters. Yeah. So I don't think there's much of an advantage there except for Joel Embiid, who definitely needs a time off between games, and he's been under the weather, like I mentioned. So I think he's the guy who's going to feel it the most and maybe be the most energized out of an extra day off.
Right.
I think it favors the Toronto coaching staff a lot more, as it gives us a day to come up with some new schemes or some new variations and new wrinkles. And that's something that I think, and I'm confident in Nick Nurse that he can do.
Right.
I think we're going to see him completely outcoach Brett Brown from Philly. There's been a lot of talk that if Brown doesn't get Philly out of this round and into the conference finals, that he's probably gone this year.
Really?
Yeah. There's a lot of, I mean, he was the coach who was supposed to get them through the process.
Yeah.
And when everything happened with, the firing of their former GM and then bringing in Colangelo, and then Colangelo getting basically asked to leave after the burner incident.
Yeah.
Brett Brown was given a lot of responsibility on this team, and that if things don't go right, it's going to come down on him this time.
Yeah.
And with the amount of talent they have, that it's his fault. Now, is that a fair assessment? I don't know. There's four really good teams in the East this year.
Yeah.
And either way, you know, there's two teams that aren't getting to the finals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So, and that's unfortunate for everybody. He's probably the only one who's at risk of getting fired, that being said.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unfortunate for him. But there doesn't seem to be a lot of high hopes for him in his coaching abilities, let's say, right? And I, you know, they made some great adjustments. Now it's time for Nick Nurse to pull his rabbit out of his hat. And I think that this break maybe gives the Raptors that extra chance. And same thing between game three and game four. There's the extra day rest as well.
Sure.
I think that just goes to, you know, it's going to be the same thing. It's great for the starting player, to get that extra day's rest. But really, that's going to benefit the Raptors coaching staff and their ability to game plan and get their players ready for the next game.
You know who it's shit for is the fans. Like, can we keep going? Like, let's get a little momentum built in this series, for Christ's sake. But
and we talked about, you know, why do you have to start the East semis so early if you're just going to give everybody an extra day off later on anyways?
Yeah.
Right? Like, why start the two series in the East before the West even finishes their game seven?
Right. I want to ask you what else has caught your eye and what might be happening in the West. But just before we jump out of here, they're heading back to Philly. Series is tied to one. You're still pretty confident this is five or six games for the Raptors like you were going in. Nothing's really changed too much on your opinion of it. I know in some sports, Philly has been known as a difficult place to play. I don't know if that's going to translate here or matter at all. But, you know, just at 1-1, you still think things are pretty soundly in control for Toronto?
Yeah, I think things are very soundly in control for Toronto. And again, everything went wrong and it still went down to the final shot, right? It was very reminiscent of that Orlando game, right? Where everything seemed to go wrong for the Raptors.
Yeah.
And it still went down to that final shot. It wasn't like they got blown out by 20. They made their comeback. They still played hard. Nobody gave up on that game.
Sure.
And I think that was a more telling happening in the game than if they had just gotten blown out, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So as a Raptor fan, you got to still have a lot of confidence. This isn't the old Raptors, right? And I think there's got to be a lot of confidence going into Philadelphia that we could even take the next three games, quite frankly. So, again, overreaction being what they are, would you have rather the Raptors 1-2 at home and maybe drop to 1 in Philly? Right. Yeah, sure. The old gentleman sweep, they call it. But, you know, I still can see it happening, you know, playing out the exact same way over five games.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect too much. I looked at my friend I was watching the game with yesterday, and I said, if the Raptors pull this off, it might be over in four.
Well, I wondered that too, right? If after playing that badly all night, if you somehow manage to claw all the way back, you go to Philly so fired up, right? Like, we pulled that out. What a comeback. The team's engaged. And you might just roll through the next two.
Yeah. And I'll give you another example of that. Now, was it last year or the year before? I can't even remember. The Raptors have been beat by Cleveland and LeBron so many times. But there was one series where we were up by like 6 points with 2 minutes left or whatever it was, or a minute left. And Cleveland did their thing where they come back. And all Toronto had the ball with 20 seconds left, and they take their shot, and it bounces off the rim. And you got DeMar on one side and JV on the other side, and they're both tipping the ball, and it just won't go in the goddamn net.
Right.
And they end up losing the game. I can't remember if that was the final shot or there was overtime involved in it. But it just felt like after that, even though they controlled the entire game up until that moment, it just ripped their heart and soul out.
Yeah.
That they felt like, God, we did everything right, and we couldn't close the door. And I did have that feeling that if the Raptors had pulled that out last night, Philly's just looking at themselves going, what the fuck can we do?
Yeah. That was ours. That was the game we needed to have and didn't get it. And yet, you got to assume, you know, and even though they know they're underdogs, right, they're going home feeling pretty good. They got the split against the better team in Toronto. You know, I'm with you. I'll defer to your expertise here that Toronto's still probably feeling pretty good. But I think Philly's probably feeling better than maybe they would have expected to at this point in the series too. So I think if nothing else, it's going to be spirited the rest of the way. So,
yeah, and at this point, no series should be easy,
right?
There should be no series that's won easily.
Right.
Every game should be competitive, right? You're talking about the eight best teams in the NBA. Every game should be hotly contested, right? Just like the NHL playoff series, right?
Yep.
You expect 2-1, 3-2 games. There's got to be punch, counterpunch the whole way
except
through
in
here.
In the NHL playoffs, no one knows who the fuck is left, whereas in the NBA, in both the East and West, it's first, second, third, and fourth all got through, and in the NHL, it's like 7th versus 5th and 13th versus 10th, some bullshit. I don't know what's going on, huh?
Yeah.
I see your point, but, you know, the NBA knows how to keep their stars involved.
You know, it's an interesting point because I do think the NBA is a... It's a different sport when you get to the playoffs.
And with so many scoring plays in basketball, so many more than in hockey or than in baseball, right? And your top guys are on the floor. Like, we're talking about Kawhi, and I talked in the first round that I thought at one point, 32 minutes wasn't enough for him, and he needed to play more, whereas Sidney Crosby, John Tavares, whoever you want to talk about as the best players in the NHL are playing maybe 20. Right. So
maybe 20.
Yeah. In the NBA, your top guys are on the floor a lot more, and there's a lot more scoring plays for them to make their impact than there is in a lot of other sports. So it does make sense that they're able to pull those, you know, teams along with them. But, you know, it's an interesting debate in terms of whether you like parity or whether you like to see your guys roll. Right now, I think I prefer the NBA just in the sense that this. We're seeing the polar extremes, right? 1-4 on both sides of the NBA got through. None of the ones, all four wild cards in the NHL got through. Like, you're missing a lot of superstar power there. So you're seeing the extremes right now. And if you force me to pick one, I'd pick the NBA's model.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely better for the narrative, right? Yeah. And to follow a team from the beginning of the season all the way through. And for the fans whose teams are out.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to go, God, I really love watching Giannis play. God, I really love watching Harden play.
And that's it. Now, as a Leaf fan, I don't give a fuck about the Islanders versus the Hurricanes. What do you want me to do with that? Right? Like,
yeah,
the Stars and the Blues. And it's always like this when my team goes out in the first round. The second round's a bit of a hangover, and I kind of make my way back in maybe around the third round. But your point's a good one normally. And I was just talking to somebody earlier today who said, when my team goes out, I'll go find Crosby, or I'll go find Taves, or I'll go find... They're gone, right? Kucherov is gone. So what am I latching on to? Like you said, to still be able to jump in and go, yeah, but Golden State's still in, and even if I hate them, that's going to be entertaining as shit, right? Or whatever it might be, there's still storylines and stars to follow.
Yeah, I also think the one advantage, as you already said, was there's so many more scoring plays in the NBA.
Yeah.
And what that means is there's going to be more highlight reel GIFs and clips that are going to be able to be shared.
Right.
And even if you're not watching the game, most fans are either on Twitter or on YouTube or whatever it might be, and they're seeing these things come across, and that's going to get you reinvigorated within that series.
Right.
Right. And God, I did watch the end of the Bruins Columbus game.
Yeah.
And that is not a pretty series.
No.
That
it's hard
is two
fought,
teams
but it's not
playing 1990s hockey
yes,
right
now.
Yes,
it is. Yes, it is.
There are games that are being won in front of the net on tip-in goals, and it's not exciting hockey to watch unless you're a true fan.
Yeah.
And you truly love positional hockey and you enjoy the sport. You have to really
or
understand
you're hardcore a fan of one of those two teams where you don't care what kind of hockey, it's just as long as my team wins, right? But I'm with you. You have to be that type of fan that wants to embrace that type of hockey and is going to watch either way. It hasn't been a pretty series. You had so much skill go out in the first round. Like all those forwards that Washington had and the Tampa had and the Pittsburgh had, and then Toronto had and
yeah,
all these like Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan in Calgary gone, right? Like all these top end high flying sniping stars. Now they got beat fair and square, but now we're kind of left with this. There's a lot of that, right? The St. Louis series, St. Louis plays very much like that, right? That kind of heavier old school hockey, and I have time for it. I don't mind watching some of it, but it's certainly not as entertaining as some of these other teams would have been.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the knee-jerk reaction is to this happening in the NHL.
Yeah.
Are we going to have teams start to go back to a heavier style of play because they've seen it work one playoffs?
Right. It's copycat league, man, they always say.
It is, and you got to believe that the teams with the stronger managements, teams, the guy that can hold the line here.
Hold your ground,
You know, and not buy into this and not give – I can't even tell you who the big free agents on any of these teams are this year. But, you know, you don't want to be that guy who gives the third-line player on Boston a three-year deal at $4 million a year or something like that because you saw him play really well. Yeah, the Backus deal. You just don't want to see that happen, right? And unfortunately, that's going to happen in the NHL.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, it's a copycat league, right? And it's going to happen because a lot of these teams don't have the money to spend on a top-end talent, so they're going to go spend money on a mid-level third-line player, and they're going to hate themselves a year from now.
Yep.
Right?
They'll be traded to Arizona.
Who's going to give James Neal another contract now, right? Like,
So I think that's an interesting debate, and it's one we can continue at another time. I want to pull it back to the NBA playoffs. Which, you know, you've referenced Boston and Milwaukee here a little bit. I haven't seen a second of what's gone on out west. What else, you know, before we wind things down, what else has jumped out at you or caught your attention, either because it's been really entertaining or really surprising? You know, what's caught your eye in this second round so far?
The biggest game by far was game one between Houston and Golden State.
Right.
That's, you know, it's always given that misnomer that this is the true finals or at least a true Western Conference finals.
Yeah.
Very interesting first game. Hugh, if any of you guys caught, and Matt, I'm sure you can repost a couple things on the Twitter account. A lot of the debates going on. You've got the GM from Houston, Daryl Morey, posting all sorts of stuff on how bad the refs were. over game seven from last year. With the leg kicks and what's allowable from the offensive player, what's allowable from the defensive player, who should be getting calls between Klay Thompson and himself.
Right.
You've got Mike D'Antoni went off about it. He went off. James Harden himself went off about it. And of course, Golden State being Golden State, they didn't back down. There's a great clip. I think it was a great clip of Steve Kerr pretending to fall into another reporter.
Right.
And calling himself James Harden, you know, just flopping around. Some people thought that was a little too much as a coach. And I'm like, well, why not? Right.
Sure.
This is a former player who's an emotional guy. Like, why can't he defend his own players?
That's how you feel about it.
And call out another player, right? Yep. If you've got the GM on the other team posting things on Twitter about all the missed calls and posting highlight reels of all the times this guy should have gotten his calls,
yeah,
I think that's fair game. So you've got three of the top five players in the league in this series, right? In Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Steph Curry. So, and close player, column number six or seven, in Klay Thompson. So, this is a dynamite series. It could be over in four. It could be over in seven.
Right.
I really don't know how this series is going to go because Houston will go only as James Harden goes, and he does rely on a lot of fouls. So we're going to see how the refs react. Their game's about to tip off in a couple minutes as we're recording this. So hopefully it'll be
We're already seeing,
by the time everybody's listening in the morning, the game's over. Yeah. But
we're already starting to see, right? Like, similar to what it was in the Toronto-Boston after game two in the NHL series, all of a sudden everyone's looking at the refs. I saw at least three or four different tweets before we fired the show up that were nothing but here's who's refereeing this game, right? And here's this team's here's Houston's record with this guy, and here's Golden State's record with this guy, and he, you know, who struggles with him, and once it becomes about that, all bets are off, right? Because does he become self-conscious now? He won't call something on this team or that team, or does he stick and double down on his reputation, right? Like, it becomes unbelievably hard to predict, and usually it's not good, right? Instead of just calling the game 50-50, usually you start to see something weird happen. And sometimes I think for these refs, it's self-conscious or it's self-preservation, right? In terms of not wanting to look a certain way, which actually makes you look worse. I think we're going to see some of that, but I was blown away at how much talk there was about the officiating, less about the last game, but going into this game. Well, who's it going to be this time, right? Who's, you know, that's fast. And we saw that, like I referenced, in Toronto-Boston game two in the NHL series. All of a sudden, well, those two sucked and they shouldn't work another. And going into game two, well, who's working this? And do they call a tight game
exactly,
or a loose game? And you're like, holy fuck, can we just focus on the athletes instead of the officials?
Yeah, let's actually focus on the guys playing the game
Exactly.
once in a while, right?
Yeah.
And I get it from Houston's side. You know, if you're calling the entire season one way, and we definitely felt like this as Leaf fans going into that Bruins series.
Mm-hmm.
Don't call the entire 82-game season one way and then change your mind as soon as the calendar flips.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've just spent 6 months playing a certain way to get a certain advantage.
Yeah.
Don't change that on me now.
Right.
And what's your reasoning behind that? If you know, either don't call it all season or, you know, call it right, you know, just be consistent is, I think, what everybody wants as a fan and as a player, right? Now, I mentioned this with the Raptors, right? Everything went wrong, and they still came within one shot.
Yep.
For Houston, everything seemed to have gone wrong in game one, and they still came within one shot.
Yeah.
A lot of their bench players didn't play well either in game one. If you had to ask me, this is a series that's going to go seven because I can't see either team not counter-punching 100% here. Even if Houston goes down two games in Golden State, I could still see them coming back and winning the next two games. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
I got to tell you, man, and you'll correct me, but Golden State looks ripe for the picking, right? Or like they're tired, or like they're spent, or like this isn't a challenge anymore, and maybe it isn't. but like maybe they're bored, or that the drive is worn off, or maybe it's that they've done this so many years in a row now that they are getting beat up and tired. I don't know. But that even with that happening, they're just so good that they're just so stacked that they may still get it done in spite of all of that. Like, they look to me a little like they're sleepwalking through this and they're still going to do it.
Against a very good team, though, right? Because it did seem like they were sleepwalking a little bit against the Clippers.
Yeah.
And the Clippers stole two games, but when they needed Kevin Durant to absolutely go off,
yeah,
he just went off for 50 points. Like, it was no big deal. I guess the fear with any sport is, how many times can you do that?
No, I agree.
How many times do you do that, and the day you're expecting Kevin Durant to go off, or Steph Curry to go off, or Klay Thompson to go off, they just can't that day.
That's right.
And now you're down two games instead of just being down one. And what did that change? And an injury here or a suspension there.
And it goes to your opponent's legs. They start feeling like they've got you, right?
That's it.
It can unravel in a hurry.
It can unravel in a hurry. And this isn't the Golden State team of 4 years ago, or they've done four finals in a row. So 5 years ago, right? So because even though this team has more stars now and has more offensive skill now, what they did 5 years ago was they caught the entire league off guard. The problem is now everybody knows how they play, and most teams mimic it in some way.
Yeah.
Right? Teams know the three ball is more important. Teams know perimeter defense is more important.
Right.
You know, spacing on the floor is important. So Golden State's no longer the team doing it different. They're just a team doing it the best.
Yeah. Yep.
And maybe not, they might not be doing it the best all the time anymore, right? They do have an aging squad, and people have seen their tape. They're not doing anything new. So they're very reliant on their individual skill at the moment. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the series. And more than that, if this series goes seven games, it's going to be really interesting to see what's left in that squad.
Do you believe that this is the West Final?
Oh, I think these are the two teams at the beginning of the year everybody wanted to see play in the final.
Yeah.
If it's Denver that takes Portland, I think this truly is the West Final.
Right.
If it's Portland that comes out of the other series, I think Portland can put a really big scare into whoever wins this. Because I think a guy like
especially
Damian
if
Lillard,
it goes long, right? Especially if you take enough out of each other.
If it goes long and there is an injury, if it goes long and they just have to empty the tank.
Yeah.
And you got a guy like Damian Lillard on the other side who can just light you up.
Yeah.
It's going to be an awful long series in the actual Western Conference Final. If it's Denver that goes through because they're a better team overall than Portland, I just don't think they have the star power or the individual skill to compete with either Houston or Golden State.
Right.
I think Portland's probably going to win this series against Denver, even though I'd love to see Jamal Murray go a little bit farther into the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't think his team's there. It's really him and Jokic right now, and I don't think the team around them is experienced enough or have the guts to go further.
Yeah.
It is really a two-man show on that side. Even though I'm really pulling for them hard, they did win game one.
Yeah.
But I do think there was a little bit of a hangover for Portland after their big win against OKC.
Yeah.
I think there was just a little hangover after that
hard
big
to get
shot.
Up and going again, yeah.
Yeah. And especially there was so much media attention given to Damian Lillard after hitting that shot, essentially from the logo to win that series. I mean,
that
was just an outrageous shot, an outrageous celebration.
Yeah.
There's definitely going to be a hangover in game one, for that. And they were in Denver and stuff like that. So I think game two, we see a different Portland team come out, maybe a team that's a little more centered again, and they get back to business. So, there's a little bit of hate between him and Russ and OKC in Portland anyway. So I think it was easy for them to just be a little you know, just not be as excited to play Denver, who nobody hates because it's fucking Denver.
Right.
Let's be serious, right? Like, there's nothing to hate about the Nuggets. They haven't been good since they traded Carmelo Anthony 10 years ago.
Right.
Like, it's very hard to hate that team and to get excited about playing them.
Sure.
You know, they don't have any polarizing figures or anything like that. The refs don't give them extra foul calls. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing really to get behind hating them. So it's very interesting in the West because you got even Portland, right? Like, nobody really hates Portland.
Well, that's it. All the star power is on one series, and the teams that you kind of would have gotten behind as underdogs are playing each other. And so,
yeah. And part of it's kind of nice because it does mean that one team is going to get a different look, right? Into the next series. And again, the later playoff series go, the more unpredictable they become.
Absolutely, man.
Right. It gets hard because these, like you said, with Philly and Toronto, right? Like 40 minutes plus for all these guys, they start to wear down.
Absolutely.
Right. We saw that with LeBron James last year. He was just absolutely spent by the time they got to play Golden State last year.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't able to take any time off during the regular season.
It's true, man. Got to keep yourself healthy. And speaking of doing so, what's on the Matt Does Physio Instagram blog these days?
It's been a little slow since we last talked. There hasn't been much posting.
Things are busy around Foundation Physio. I know that much, but been a little quiet.
So the blog's been a little quiet. I'm looking into doing something about our guy Zach Hyman, who turns out played a couple games on a torn ACL.
Yeah.
Just trying to dig up a little more information about his actual injury date and how it happened and stuff before we put anything out about that. Other than that, the NBA's been pretty injury-free except for Greg Monroe, and I'm not going to waste my time on him. So, out of spite, mostly.
No, exactly. So, you can follow Maddie. The Zach Hyman thing will be coming up shortly, but even if... you know, if you haven't been over there, you should check it out because he's got all kinds of great stuff posted there all the time at Matt Does Physio on Instagram. We are at Tall Can Audio on Instagram. We don't post anything even marginally educational, but we talk about some beer and shit. So if you want to,
that's
give us
educational.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can give us a follow there. He's at Matthew Lang on Twitter. We are at Tall Can Audio on Twitter. We're also facebook.com/TallCanAudio. As we get ready to wind this one down, don't forget we got your boy Steve McLean. Looks like he will be in studio from the OHL Fanboys this Saturday following Ottawa 67s and Guelph Storm Game 2. Looking forward to having him around. Maddie, anything else you want to throw down before we get out of here?
Just as you were doing your ending, Steph Curry just left the court.
Oh, boy.
Looks like it might be a groin injury. We'll see.
Well, that'll give you something extra.
You might be getting a Matt Does Physio post tomorrow morning.
There you go. It sounds like, and man, can you think of anyone, a bigger name left standing right now that no one wants getting hurt?
That's exactly it.
So we will wind this one down. Like I said, follow Maddie. He, at Matt Does Physio on Instagram. We'll get to the bottom of that, or he will. I'll just read it, and you guys can do the same. We'll get the hell out of here. Maddie, as always, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, buddy.
And we'll talk to you all in the next Tall Can Sports.
We're not going to be fucking sunk this year. Yeah!
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.